Hey guys, what's happening? Welcome to Action Movie Anatomy, and if you watch this show, you know that we have very specific rules we adhere to when we choose the movies we cover. Today's episode is a very special episode because we have decided to talk about eight of our favorite movies of all time that we wish we could do on the show, but the rules don't quite allow for. So we are going to talk about eight of our all-time favorite movies that we haven't done on the show and we may never do on the show for at least a few minutes per movie. Hang out with us, guys. You're going to just talk a whole bunch of smack about Boogie Nights and awesome movies like that. So we'll see you in a second.
Welcome to Popcorn Talk, featuring movie discussion, news, and interviews. Popcorn Talk, we talk movies. And now, here's Popcorn Talk's Action Movie Anatomy.
Boom! What's up, everybody? Welcome to the show.
I felt like we needed music.
Yeah, it's an exciting one. We need, like, the Shaft music or something like that. Oh, yeah, yeah. The X-Men music from the animated series. That was great.
That's perfect.
I recognized that instantly.
You recognized it almost too quickly. Like, Steven, play this real quick. We got Steven Lemieux in the booth, everybody. That's his EP of Popcorn Talk.
Yeah, he's back. He's back in the booth. It's been a while.
He was with us in the very beginning when we started this show.
He was with us long ago.
Long ago.
So yeah, guys, this is Action Movie Anatomy. If you are listening or watching and you're familiar with this show, you know that we cover action movies on this show. And we are hosted on the Popcorn Talk Network, which is the online broadcast network dedicated to talking movies and all things movie related. I'm your host, Ben Bateman, joined today by my excellently dressed co-host. Today he has a tie and a tie clip and a jacket and a pocket square.
But no pants. Yeah. Hey, what's up, everybody? Which camera am I looking at?
I don't know. Is it the top or the bottom?
Which one is it, Steve-O?
I've been lazy eyeing.
Bottom. There we go. Guys, this is so exciting. First of all, I apologize. I left my voice at my fantasy football draft. If you find that, Commissioner, please return it to its rightful owner. This is so cool. This is like one of the most exciting things that we've done on the show for me. And and I think what's really important about it being exciting for me is knowing that it's going to be exciting for these guys. Because we did our best of year one.
Yeah.
And that really only caters to people
who
love our show.
Yeah.
As you should. This, I think, caters to all movie fans.
Yeah.
So let us know if you guys do like this at AMA Podcast, because I think this is an awesome idea.
Yeah, we're going to start, I think, doing some more stuff like this, guys. We're going to sort of mix up the shows. We were talking about things like, we've done 70 episodes now, and there's all these movies that we want to talk about we can't, or we don't feel they fit the rules, because our show, being an action movie show, is very specific. Every once in a while, I think we're going to kind of mix it up and give you guys, like, for instance, we were talking about, like, the heist show, you know? Take like Ocean's 11 or The Sting. Those are heist movies. We love them. They don't really fit the show, but people who like action movies probably like those movies.
Right. So if we did like three heist movies in one episode,
something like that,
you know, like how cool would that be?
So today, guys, it's eight movies that we wish we could cover on AMA, but haven't yet and may never cover. We're going to go into each one of them. We're going to break it down for a few minutes. It's going to be like a tiny mini, just like love fest episode sort of thing per thing. And if you guys want to follow along with the conversation, of course, follow along here with us in the chat and tweet at us. You can find me at Ben Bateman Media.
And you can find me at Andrew Guy.
And if you want to tweet at the show, at AMA Podcast. You guys have been very vocal recently. It's been really fun. A lot of you have actually been talking to us and sharing your thoughts. So yeah, let us know what you think. We're gonna kick it off today with a little movie we like to call Sunshine.
Sunshine.
Danny Boyle's sci-fi, like, this was like such an underrated movie when it came out.
I think this movie is, not only does it have some of the greatest music ever in a film, but it's just beautiful, and it's Danny Boyle, and everyone is, they're at the top of their game acting. So I pulled a clip here, and this is Adagio in G minor.
In D minor.
D minor, I believe. And let's clip this up. Show this up.
John Murphy, is that the artist?
Miss Byrne.
Only dream I ever have.
Byrne.
Every time I shut my eyes.
This movie's so sweet.
Yeah, and look how beautiful it already is. Just the...
This movie came out when Blu-ray was just becoming a thing.
Are you scared?
It's no longer a thing.
It's gone.
My local video store had a giant TV, like 100-inch or something like that, and they had the Blu-ray of this. It was like one of the first things they had.
Right.
And I remember walking in and just staring at it. It's gorgeous.
So why can't we 12 hours before do this on the show?
We might be able to do this. This one's close.
It's a little slow.
It's more of a drama, really more of a drama than an action movie. The worst part of the movie is when the action starts.
Yeah, because it doesn't really make much sense.
No.
This song makes sense.
So this is like a weird music video montage of like scenes from the movie with the best songs.
Yep. And it's known as Kaneda's death because that is the captain of the ship.
What do you see, Kaneda?
What do you see?
I mean,
If you guys haven't seen Sunshine, this is like, this is, I would think, I'm going to look at our list here. This is the number one movie on this list that if you love our show, I think appeals to you.
I think so.
It just feels like our show. It doesn't have the silly sort of qualities to it that some of our movies do.
No.
But it has the, like, if you loved the Drive episode, or if you loved Lone Survivor, if you loved The Town, those are the kind of movies that you will love this movie.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think that, yeah, you're right. The tone is just 100% correct. And Danny Boyle, he has this way of making action movies feel... Because 28 Days Later is a movie I think we could do on our show eventually. Maybe for like a Halloween episode. But it doesn't ever feel like an intense drama. I mean, an awesome action movie. It always feels like an intense drama.
Totally.
Because the way he shoots and directs it and his story writing.
The poster for this movie is really terrifying with Cillian Murphy's face from the planet, though. If you look it up.
It really looks like it's a lot more, So you fade that out. So, yeah, this is the scene in the movie that I won't go too far into it, but there's just this incredible, like, it's just this incredible sequence where Searle, who is played by Cliff Curtis, and who is, like, he's, like, the psychiatrist on board, and he is obsessed with the sun. He just wants to get closer and closer, and he's always sitting in the observation room, and he's always, like, lowering the shield so he can experience more of it. So his face is always sunburned.
Yeah, like towards peeling. The end of it, it's, like, really gnarly and peeling, and the sun in this movie has, like, this... It's like that. The thing you stare at, kind of. It's like the ring in Lord of the Rings.
Yeah, I mean, the song is called Kaneda's Death, so I think that's pretty obvious.
But it's
like this incredible scene where Kaneda has gone out to the surface of the ship to fix the shields, but he knows that he's risking his life. And it's Kaneda is played by the actor who plays in The Last Samurai.
Yeah, it's the guy that plays
the brother.
Hiroyuki Sanada. He's great. He's in a sci-fi show called Helix. He's in a bunch of stuff.
He's
awesome.
Such a badass.
Yeah, he's great.
And he goes out. He's out on the ship.
Yeah.
And he sends everyone back, and he knows he's probably not going to make it.
Yeah, so he's out there, and they can feel as the shields are closing because he's fixed them that the sun is rounding the ship, and he's going to get hit with the sun. And Searle, Cliff Curtis, is sitting there, and he's like whispering the mic. He's like, "What do you see, Kaneda? What do you see? What do you see, Kaneda?"
And he's just stuck there. He can't move. And then...
So when I met Cliff Curtis for Fear of the Walking Dead, this was my number one goal, was to, like, do the line for him and get a laugh out of him. And it worked. It was glorious. He did not see it coming, did not realize the people quoted the line or loved it. So
I think it's crazy that Cillian Murphy has proven that he can actually be a leading man action star.
Yeah.
But he's the everyman. I mean, like, if you watch 28 Days Later and you watch Sunshine, there's never moments of where you're like, come on, this guy.
Right.
You completely empathize with him.
Yeah, 100%.
All right, guys, so that's Sunshine. We're going to move right along into our second movie.
Yeah, well, I did want to say, before we move on from Sunshine really quickly,
I'm sorry.
Just because I wanted to talk about Danny Boyle for a minute.
Oh, all right.
And it's interesting, Danny Boyle, guys, is not a guy we've ever done one of his movies on the show. And it's because he doesn't really make action movies.
No, I mean, his biggest claim to fame is probably Trainspotting.
Yeah, but see, that's funny you say that, right? Because that's kind of who Danny Boyle is. You could make that argument for five of his movies.
Yeah, absolutely.
You could make the argument. He started his career with Trainspotting after he made Shallow Grave. That was like where people knew. And then he made The Beach, which a lot of people remember. It has kind of a bad ending, but people love The Beach.
Sweet. It's a cult classic.
28 Days Later, super famous. It's hard to not say that Slumdog Millionaire won Best Picture isn't actually his greatest claim to fame.
Right.
Right? So it's like 127 Hours. I mean, he made some incredible movies. This movie, particularly Sunshine, it's kind of like when Christopher Nolan made Prestige between the Batman movies. And it's like this movie that people who love it, love it. If you don't know about it, you just have no idea. It's the same thing with Danny Boyle. He made Millions in 2004 after making 28 Days Later in 2002, and then he won the Oscar in 2008 for Slumdog. Sunshine's 07. He kind of just snuck it in there. It didn't get a lot of press.
And all those movies have some action in them. You know? Like, even Slumdog. And I think that is what's so great about Danny Boyle. If you can make a hybrid director of Paul Thomas Anderson and Zack Snyder, that would be Danny Boyle. And the reason I say that is because I don't like Zack Snyder. You don't like Zack Snyder. That's fine.
Yeah.
But there's one thing that you can't deny, and I think you guys agree, is that Zack Snyder is fantastic at painting beautiful pictures at parts of his films.
It's what he's best at.
So you look at Danny Boyle and you watch his films. There's always incredible cinematography and shots in that, except he's also a master storyteller.
His issue is he worked with this one screenwriter who I believe wrote both Sunshine, The Beach, and 28 Days Later. It's the same guy. And all three of those movies have the same problem, which is that they fall apart in the final 25 minutes, as like this weird action sequence that doesn't feel like it quite fits the movie. I think it's done best in 28 Days Later.
I was going to say, I actually completely disagree with that on 28 Days Later, because people have been saying that for a long time.
Yeah.
I think the In the House and the Heartbeat is probably the best part of the film.
I mean, on a personal level, that's not my favorite, but mm-hmm. I definitely think that in Sunshine and the Beach, it takes away from the movie.
Yeah, the sunshine thing is just weird.
Yeah.
You know?
So, but anyway, guys, I recommend seeing Sunshine. It's absolutely amazing. It's really one of my all-timers. I love that movie. I deliver the speech in our fantasy football league before the draft every year, and I usually play that song in the background because it's so epic, and how can you beat it?
It's the best.
So let's move on to a comedy. Steven, if you can cue up the scene from The Other Guys.
The Other Guys.
The Other Guys is criminally underrated, guys. It's for those that don't know, it's Mark Wahlberg and Will Ferrell in a buddy cop movie from, I think, 2010.
I feel like we could do this as an April Fool's.
Yeah, because it's got all the cliches about like a hardcore cop movie, but right. It's like a total comedy. I think that this is the single most quoted movie of our entire friendship.
It's, yeah.
We've seen it like 50 times or something.
My wife's making her famous deviled eggs. My waistline is furious.
It's a bad time, Bob.
It's a bad time, Bob.
If you haven't seen this movie, do yourself a favor and watch it. I think it's the best written. It's, yeah. Oh, The Rock. This is right before The Rock blew up into like a world like leading man superstar.
Right.
He was known for being a really, really good supporting role. Because the next year he's in Fast Five.
Yeah, and then he did that Be Cool before this.
This is before this.
Like kind of showing that he was funny.
Comedy. All right, listen up. He's so good at this part.
Cash Park.
Brody Jenner's going to be there. Biling. That little short bitch from Jersey Shore.
The cast is so good. It's so good. Biling.
Let me say something right now. It's about a man who came from Austria with a dream.
Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Let me finish. He became a champion and then a movie star.
Arnold Schwarzenegger.
God damn it, let me finish. They ruined the story.
That's my favorite line of the whole movie.
Yeah. Do our job. If it weren't for you guys doing all the paperwork, answering the phone, and all that stuff.
Wahlberg plays like angry so well.
Oh, he's so good. He's like, I need you to stop humming.
But we have to all do to what you guys do. Thank you.
And we do it again and again.
Shut your face. If we want to hear you talk, I will shove my arm up your ass and work your mouth like a puppet. You hear me? You hear me? Cash bar.
It's just amazing. It's. I think it's honestly... So there's a couple of things that are very interesting about this movie. The first one is that it's directed by Adam McKay.
My face hurts.
Yeah. Adam McKay ended up directing The Big Short and getting an Oscar nomination for it. A lot of the subjects that are covered in this... It's about the financial crisis.
Yeah.
It's about Ponzi schemes. And the song that plays, which is When the Levee Breaks by Led Zeppelin, during the credits of this movie, and then there's like, it's basically that song plays and it explains how a Ponzi scheme works. It's the same song that plays during the fucking credits in The Other Guy. Big Short.
Big Short, yeah.
It's crazy. And it's like, the writing in this movie, I honestly think, is smarter than almost any Will Ferrell comedy ever. It gets funnier every time.
Well, that's the thing that's been happening with Will Ferrell is I think early on in his career, we were so enamored with him. Anything he did was so exciting, and it was fresh. Yep. You know, so it goes down as something being classic. Whereas... This is it.
Yeah, this is when the movie breaks, yeah.
Whereas now... The movies he does aren't as smart. Like, what it was, Get Hard, you know? It was kind of around that time that he started doing, like, Blades of Glory and Semi-Pro.
Yeah.
He was oversaturating the market. This is right before that still.
Is it? I think maybe it's right during.
Or is it after? Is it after?
I think it might be right after, but the
point is that he takes, like, a little bit of...
This movie got missed, though, because of what you're talking about.
Yeah.
That's the thing. Is like, Anchorman was the... So there's Old School and Anchorman.
And Step Brothers.
Yeah. Right? And the Talladega Nights is in there, which is very funny. Blades of Glory and Semi-Pro aren't as well-liked. And I think when Land of the Lost and those ones started coming out is when people started to be like, all right, I'm just tired of this shtick. This came out directly after. And I think it was just kind of like, I'm just over this guy. But it's honestly funnier than every one of those movies except Step Brothers, which I would put it on par with to me.
Yeah.
Anchorman I'd put it on par with, and I would put it on par with Old School. But
for
that's
sure.
Just me personally.
Yeah, I mean, I know that you like this movie more than I do, but I absolutely love this movie, and I was a person that fell victim to what I was talking about and what you're talking about. I didn't see it.
Yeah.
I didn't.
Right.
I didn't. And then I watched it once with you, and I don't know if I was tired or drunk or whatever. I just remember being like, okay, that's pretty good. It's pretty good. But I remember watching it the second time.
Yeah.
And every other time since, it gets better and better. And everyone's so good in it.
Michael Keaton's fantastic. He almost makes the movie. You have Rob Riggle, yeah, so good. You have, like, it's just like,
don't
scene,
go chasing waterfalls.
Yeah, scene after scene after scene after scene, I feel like, in this movie. The pacing is so good.
Yeah.
That it's just like, the whole scene was with Christina and, like,
Christina, your husband.
Yeah, literally this movie is, I laugh harder at this movie than most.
Top five buddy cop movies right now that we love.
All time?
So you gotta go, I think you gotta throw Lethal Weapon in there. Because I love their, yeah, I love, yeah, them in 1, 2, 3, and 4. One and four.
And I put this in my top five because I love it.
Yeah, I put this in my top five.
What am I forgetting? I mean, it's like a...
There's also like Bad Boys.
Oh, yeah. Bad Boys 1 is really sweet.
Yeah. What was that? What was the one? Blue Streak?
Oh,
Martin,
yeah.
Martin Lawrence.
And, I love Blue Streak.
Dude, it was the first DVD. No, actually, Spies Like Us was, yeah, the first DVD I owned. Too. Blue Streak was the second.
Yeah, Blue Streak is the one where it's him and Luke Wilson. Yeah, Luke Wilson. And it's the one where he's got the diamond,
the gigantic
diamond. It's like hidden in the vent of the police station.
He hides it in a vent of a construction building, and it, yeah, turns into a police station.
Yeah, that's right.
It's great.
And he shows up with like the big teeth and the afro. Yeah, the movie's so dumb.
So dumb.
Do you remember the movie Nothing to Lose?
Absolutely.
With
Tim Robbins and Martin Lawrence.
Yeah.
I actually watched it like a couple weeks ago.
Really?
It's very good.
Was it funny?
It's still funny.
Oh, it held up.
Steven, what's your favorite buddy cop movie? Do you have one?
Man, I don't know if the Shanghai series would count.
Oh, Shanghai Noon!
Shanghai Noon, Shanghai Nights, Rush Hour.
Oh, Rush Hour. Yeah, yeah, there's a lot of these.
But I think for me now, where I'm at in my life and you know, what I enjoy, Other Guys is my number one. Absolutely.
It is 100% my favorite. Other Guys is one of those movies, guys, that I will say, when you hear me say that about it being my favorite Will Ferrell movie, I get the same response from 100% of people, which is that's crazy.
Yeah,
it's not as good,
yeah,
as those movies. I don't know what you're talking about. And people will say, I saw it, I didn't think it was that funny. It just gets better every time, and if you watch it really expecting it to be smarter, mm-hmm, it is smarter.
You know what I think the reason it might be smarter is because Will Ferrell never plays the straight man.
Yeah.
He hardly ever does.
Yeah.
And for him to be the straight as an arrow and Wahlberg to just be off the wall.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Oh, the Nice Guys, man. Nice guys is top three.
Oh,
for
yeah,
me.
I was actually thinking about that last night.
The Nice,
yeah,
Guys.
Nice Guys. Guys, go watch our Nice Guys episode. It is so good. Go watch that movie.
That movie's great. 48 hours and they're really good.
Crying, laughing with that movie.
Let's move on, guys. Let's move on to the next. And this is not going to be a single movie, but this is going to be a trilogy. And this is The Fellowship of the Ring, The Two Towers, and The Return of the King. The three Lord of the Rings films that came out when we were like 13 or something, right?
Yeah.
I mean, like these 01, so like, yeah, we were 13 years old when these came out.
So we're going to talk about this for a second, and then I've got a clip that I want to cue. And the reason that I want to talk first is because this is one of the franchises that was kind of a heartbreak for me that we couldn't do on our show. You know, this is, I mean, Lord of the, yeah, Rings, guys, is, it might be my favorite trilogy of all time. I think it is, actually.
Over Star Wars, over
all of them.
Yeah.
Literally every single one. And it's because every movie I can argue why it's the best one.
Right.
I really can. And there's so much good action. The acting is fantastic. And the amount of Academy Awards just goes to show.
Yeah.
You know? So, I want to cue Two Towers. It's the very end. This is a moment where Helm's Deep has just happened.
Right.
One of the greatest action scenes. Probably the best action sequence in the whole trilogy.
Yeah, definitely.
And it's followed by the greatest speech in the whole trilogy.
Yeah.
And that's from Samwise Gamgee.
Yeah. It's good.
I am your Sam.
I am your Sam.
I'm your Sam.
I do love these movies so much. I mean, as the show evolves, who knows? We may be able to end up doing one of these. This would be the one, though.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's so wrong. By rights, we shouldn't even be here.
And I've never seen him act like this ever again.
Sean Astin?
Yeah. He's very good.
He's really good.
But he's just like this, though.
Like in the great stories, Mr. Frodo. The ones that really mattered.
The music, the soundtrack also. For this.
Yeah.
They were.
Soundtrack's really
Sometimes
good.
Sometimes you didn't want to know the end. Because how could the end be happy? How could the world,
yes,
go back to the way it was when so much bad had happened?
And like Ian McKellen, the king.
Yeah.
But in the end, oh.
King Théoden?
He is some of the greatest speeches also.
Shadow. Even darkness must pass.
It's wild to
but
think
day will come.
How long it's
and when
been
the sun
since
shines,
this came out.
Shine
is
out
it 2001,
2003?
Yeah.
It's like they're...
Those were the stories that stayed with you.
It's like they're actually
meant something.
Becoming classics. Like, they're not like recent movies
I mean,
anymore.
So,
they're becoming like actually like they look a little outdated. They're a little older, like classic movies are.
Yeah.
Folk in those stories had lots of chances of turning back, only they didn't.
Yeah, man. I mean, we're getting older.
They kept going.
Yeah,
it's just happening.
Because they were holding on to something.
This is the best line right here.
What are we holding on to, Sam?
Gollum, dick.
But there's some good in this world, Mr. Frodo, and it's worth fighting for.
Oh, just beautiful.
That's the end of it?
Yep, that's the end of it. I'm telling you, at the end of Return of the King,
yeah,
when everyone's bowing, once he finally gets crowned, Aragorn finally becomes king, and he comes up to the hobbits.
You cry?
Every time.
Yeah.
Because they start to bow, and he stops them. And he goes, my friends, you bow for no one. Yeah. And then he bows. Oh,
yeah.
God.
It's really good. When my mom was in town just like a few months ago, I was like, do you want to go out to dinner and see a movie? She was like, can you just cook for me and we watch Lord of the Rings movies? I was like, all right, because my mom read the books to me as a kid.
Really?
Yeah, twice. She read The Hobbit to me once and Lord of the Rings once, I think, when I was like four.
And then again, another time when you were 18.
When I was like seven or something.
Because that's how long. Those books are like that big.
Yeah. But she loved those books. That was like she loved like the C.S. Lewis books too. Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe. So I get all those, like, it was my bedtime stories.
Do you have a favorite of the three?
It's funny, right? Because it's kind of the same. I think it's the same process that people go through with the Star Wars movies.
Mm-hmm.
I think when those movies came out, everybody kind of gravitates towards Empire. But if you really go back and watch them, it's like, how can you not love the first one? It's the same thing that happened to us with Bourne. I loved Two Towers the most for the longest time.
Same.
And when I watched Return of the King recently, I was like, this is so good. Because so many of the scenes that I remember are in that movie.
Yeah.
But when I watched Fellowship again, like just 3 months ago, I was just like, this is just done so well. And so much of what I remember is from this movie.
And it's like what we've talked about numerous times is, I think, even though Dark Knight might be my favorite and the best, I still think Batman Begins is the most important. I still think A New Hope is the most important.
Yeah.
I still think The Fellowship is the most important.
Yeah.
You know, but I still, I don't know. I still to this day cannot pick a favorite out of the three.
Yeah, it's definitely a hard one. It's definitely a hard one for me. Batman Begins, you and I have always disagreed on that a little bit. I love Batman Begins. Like, it's really good. But for whatever reason, when I walked out of the theater with Batman Begins, I was kind of like, that was really good. And then like Dark Knight, it just had such a different feeling. It was like, that was an incredible film. That's something I will never forget watching. And I didn't feel that way about Batman Begins.
Yeah.
It's
really
become more important in retrospect because the trilogy was so good.
Yeah.
But as a standalone movie, it was just like, that was pretty good. That was well done. I liked that. I was a Batman fan as a kid and they did a good job. But I was maybe too young also because 2005.
Yeah, I mean, The Dark Knight affected us. You know,
right.
It really did. And I think that that's maybe why it might not be on this show now is because I think that we can maybe work towards getting it on AMA one day.
Yeah, Dark Knight may make it. Let's move on to number 4. We're switching genres again on you guys.
We are.
This is a very important one. So guys, we had a decision to make, and that decision was that there's a Paul Thomas Anderson film on this list that we're going to get to, and one that we skipped. We didn't want to do two P.T. Anderson movies, but one of them has Tom Cruise in it. We decided we would skip the one with Cruise and just throw on arguably the greatest Cruise film of all time, which is Jerry Maguire.
Jerry Maguire is Tom Cruise at his absolute cruisiest, gunning for an Oscar
and getting nominated for one at his cruisiest.
Yes.
It's like how can you imagine Tom Cruise doing his Tom Cruise shtick and getting an Oscar nomination? That's because it was 1996 and the world wasn't just over it. He was like, it was the prime. There's a reason Tom Cruise is like the most magnetic and like pretty much most successful financial movie star ever. And it's because like he just, you watch Jerry Maguire, and honestly, if you don't like Tom Cruise, you probably hate the movie.
You should go back and watch Jerry Maguire if you've been a fan of our show, though, because that's what happened to me.
Yeah.
Because what happens to so many people with Jerry Maguire is it was so overly quoted when we were younger, man.
Yeah.
You had me at Hello,
I hated the
Money.
I hated it as a kid. I never wanted to watch it.
I hated it for so long, but recently when we went on the Six Degrees podcast, I went and watched it again.
It's just fucking good.
That's great.
It's everything about it, like all the things, like Cuba winning the Oscar, deserved. He was great. When Secret Garden, the Bruce Springsteen song, is playing in the background when Cruise like walks in the room.
And they're all there at the divorced wives party.
Yeah. And he gives her the thing. We had our company, our little, we had a very big day today.
Very big day today.
But you know, and he's like, but it wasn't complete. It wasn't even in the vicinity of complete. And it's just so good. I gotta say, man, you go watch Jerry Maguire, guys. It's the old kid, now. Yeah, he's adorable.
Renee, before you get tired of her.
Yeah.
Like, it's just, everything is great. It's written so well. And Jay Moore is the ultimate shit weasel in that movie.
Such a shit weasel. There's also, like, there's great scenes, like the scenes with Cruz and Cuba when they're walking and talking about, like, you don't shoplift the pootie, the whole single mother thing.
Right.
It's a very, very well-written script. It's the other thing you realize is that Cameron Crowe in the 2000s, in the 90s, I'm sorry, was just at his best. Yeah. He's kind of like Wes Anderson in the way that, though Wes Anderson has rebounded now.
Yeah, he kind of came back around.
But there was a solid 5 or 6 years where people were just kind of like, I wonder if this shtick is getting too old. I'm not really that into it anymore. And it happened to Cameron Crowe because he made Elizabethtown, which was kind of a flop, though I like it.
I love it.
Yeah, that movie was kind of a flop. People didn't really like it. You know, I feel like he made something else that was pretty bad. Oh, didn't he make something kind of, Aloha? Right?
Oh, is that the one with Beale? I mean, Alba?
Yeah, no. It's the one with Emma Stone playing an Asian pilot.
Oh, that's him?
Yeah. Crowe had some big misses, but in the 90s, Cameron Crowe did Singles, he did this movie, and he did Almost Famous. And I think there's one other movie in the 90s that he did Vanilla Sky. That's when it started to go downhill.
I don't even think you need to do anything after Jerry Maguire and Almost Famous. As a writer, as a director, anything, like, even as an actor.
Yep.
Like, if you're in both those movies... You're right. It's iconic.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, this is when people say, "What is your favorite Tom Cruise movie?" I'm the biggest Cruise fan I've ever met, and
you are.
I think there's like 3 or 4 that I could put into the conversation. Risky Business and Jerry Maguire are like usually kind of neck and neck with Magnolia, and I would say like maybe, God, like at this point, like Edge of Tomorrow almost makes it. Those are like probably the 4. I'm probably forgetting one that is like absolutely needs to be on the list. But
yeah, I mean, I know that we would.
Mission Impossible 3.
I could never have Jerry Maguire on AMA.
Yeah.
But I do think this Magnolia and maybe Minority Report or MI3.
Fucking sweet. Last Samurai is so sweet.
Oh, Samurai.
Collateral's so good, too.
Tom Cruise is so awesome. I love that we had to throw on a movie. I wonder what movie we would. Guys, hashtag...
What's going to happen, though? We didn't say this yet, but there one or two of these movies is going to end up on this.
They will end up on the show based off of a bracket, based off of a poll that we'll do.
We're gonna be having you guys vote with these movies against each other to end up with a couple on the show. So stay tuned for that. Let's keep it moving.
Please don't vote for Jerry Maguire to be on the show, though.
Let's keep it moving. Let's get into. I think I love this movie more than most. The Weatherman.
Okay, so I'm going to use this as a shameless plug for myself real quick.
Yeah, go ahead.
You know that I was just...
Oh, wait, sorry. Something came to mind that I wanted to point out because it was so related to what we were just talking about.
Okay.
I didn't want to forget, and you were there for this. So, guys, we were talking about Cameron Crowe and Almost Famous and Tom Cruise. And when we were in San Diego,
yes.
We did press for a show called Outcast that is on Cinemax.
Uh-huh.
And it's the second time that I've interviewed the cast. Andrew did half the cast this time with me. And I interviewed Patrick Fugit, who's the star of Outcast. And if you guys don't know, he's the kid from Almost Famous.
It took me a minute to recognize him.
I straight up didn't the first time I interviewed him. I didn't realize that's who it was. And I even looked at the list and I saw that he was in Almost Famous and I didn't put two and two together.
I actually probably didn't even notice. I think you told me.
Right. But I was like, I realized it before we met him the second time. So I was like, okay, I have to ask him about Tom Cruise. I have to ask him about Almost Famous. And so we sit down with the producer, Chris Black, and I say to him, we're talking about our show, Action Movie Anatomy. And he's like, oh, that sounds really cool. And he's like, what kind of movies do you do? And we talked about Cruise for a minute.
Yeah.
And he was like, oh, you love Tom Cruise? You got to talk to Patrick. He loves Tom Cruise.
He's got an impression. Great impression.
And I was like, Andrew, it's happening. Cruise off on camera, me and Patrick Fugit. So we do the interview with him. And at the end of it, I was like, did you know that Almost Famous was going to kind of be what it was? And he was like, I couldn't have known that Almost Famous was going to mean what it meant to people. And I was like, would you mind saying to me in Tom Cruise voice that you didn't know Almost Famous was going to be what it was?
He's like, what? You want me to...
But he got really excited. Yeah. So he does his impression, and it's like decent. And
at first, it's not that good.
Yeah.
I think because he was so caught off guard by it. But then okay, so keep going.
And so then I was like, you kind of did the more like, you know, the fun one. I was like, you got to do the intense one. And I was like, I did mine for him. And he starts giggling. Like, he's like, because he loves it. And then
he does his.
And then he does his, and it's like just as good again. It's like way better.
It's great.
I thought it was pretty funny. If you guys want to find that, it exists on YouTube. If you just look up probably...
Ben
Popcorn
Bateman,
Talk,
yeah.
Patrick Fugit, I would think.
Yeah,
you can find it. But it's pretty hilarious. If you guys like Tom Cruise, I think you'll get a laugh out of it. So moving on to The Weatherman, shameless self-plug, go for it.
So Netflix is doing a lot of like these new small shows, and they had me on as a guest for one called Binge Club.
Yeah.
And it was called Binge Club, Nick Cage by Hair.
Yeah.
And it's 3 movies in a row, and one of them was The Weatherman, which I hadn't seen in a long time.
Yeah.
This movie is so good.
Yeah.
And him and Michael Caine, their scenes together,
they're heartbreaking.
They're incredible. They're real. And this is, look, Nick Cage is a phenomenal actor. Yeah. I don't care what anyone says. I don't care how bad his career has gotten.
Yep.
He is excellent in this film.
It's fantastic.
Just like he is in Leaving Las Vegas.
Yeah, this movie, I can't remember who the writer is, but it's directed by Gore Verbinski. And it suffered from a couple things. 2006, I believe it's 2006. The Family Man, I think, is 01, maybe.
Mm.
01, 02, something like that. Maybe it's 2000, even.
Is that Taye Leone?
Yeah.
I loved her.
I love The Family Man. That movie's really good.
Yeah, it's good. It's heartbreaking.
Yeah, it's a really good movie. And The Family Man was well-liked by a lot of people. When The Weatherman came out, it was like a few years later, and I think there was a little bit of just like, the trailer was trying really hard to make this kind of like a screwball, kind of black comedy a little bit, but it didn't seem anywhere near as dark or interesting as it ended
up actually
being.
It was like leaning two towards trying to be like a quirky one, like a Royal Tenenbaums or something like
totally.
That.
Totally. It was leaning heavily on the quirk, and people missed it. I missed it.
Yeah.
I ended up seeing it in like 2008 or 2009 probably, and it's hilarious. It's laugh out loud funny. The script is really touching in a lot of moments. It's got this quality to it. Nick Cage in this movie plays this like really lovable dumb character that he doesn't get to play in movies all that often. It's like they want you to be painfully aware of how kind of just like stupid of a character he is, but he thinks he's really smart.
Yeah, I always say that I think Nick Cage is at his best when his character is at his worst.
Yeah,
if that makes sense.
Yeah, that's
like,
great.
He is so good when he is self-deprecating, when he's down on his luck. I mean, Leaving Las Vegas, Raising Arizona, Family Man.
Yeah.
They're all movies where he's just kind of a piece of shit.
Yeah, and he kind of is in this movie.
He is.
It's got funny scene after funny scene. There's just some great moments of him standing up for his family. Mm-hmm. The scenes with he and his father with Michael Caine are great. There's a great quote where he's in the car with Michael Caine, because very, very early in the movie, you find out that Michael Caine has cancer. That's like one of the things that drives the whole plot of the movie.
Are you talking about the Like a Rock speech in the car after that?
It's when he's telling him in the car.
Right.
And, long story short, he tries to play a song for him, something goes wrong, and in the car, they're having this scene towards the end where Michael Caine's asking him what he meant by playing the song for him.
What did you mean when you said that I was like a rock?
And he's like trying to explain it, but he doesn't do a very good job, and at this point, Nick Cage in the movie is so beaten down, but Caine has this great line where he says, "It doesn't matter how old you get, you never stop worrying about your children."
Yeah.
And that's like, it's lines like that that make movies like this so good, because there's the funny moments, and there's the, he's a really fucking dark character. Like Nick Cage, he's like, he lives like a pretty dark and like kind of just
sad
and pointless existence.
And I think you're so right when you say he's dumb, because that doesn't happen a lot with his characters. They're not actually dumb.
No.
They just have given up or don't care. He's pretty unaware of himself in this movie.
Yeah.
And he's so good at it. I don't know. There's something beautiful about watching him be that guy, because you kind of love to hate him and you kind of hate to love him.
He's like a clueless douchebag. It's great.
Yeah.
It's fucking great. Like this movie.
Clueless douchebag.
It's amazing with the amount of movies you think you've seen in your life. I was thinking about this. Like, if I really was going to list how many movies I've actually watched in my life, it feels like thousands, but I'll bet you it's less than 1,000 movies.
Yeah.
Probably. Like 1,000 movies is so many. So if I really had to think about ranking every movie I've ever actually seen in my life, I mean, maybe it's over 1,000 with TV. I think Weatherman's like a top 100 movie for me.
Yeah.
Like, I just love it.
And it's absolutely a movie, if I was like, if I have to see every Nick Cage movie, I've never seen one movie, which one should I see? Absolutely,
yeah.
This would be in that list.
Yeah,
yeah,
totally. So moving on, guys.
These are
the
final two?
Final three.
Final three. Okay, three more.
So this is a movie I saw in theaters. Did you see this in theaters? Oh, you don't know what it is.
I don't know what it is.
The Truman Show. Peter Weir. 1996?
Six. I just
look it up.
Watch this. So I was just home for my niece's wedding.
Yeah.
And my nephews and my nieces are all getting. I've been an uncle since I was 5. I'm 28, so that means the oldest one's 23, but the youngest one's 14.
98.
So they're all old enough to where they're starting to watch better movies. Not movies like, because I've been watching Lord of the Rings with them for years, but like they don't get movies like Truman Show, or they didn't get movies like Truman Show.
Yeah.
So I was just there. And we were all kind of tired, and I think it was the day after the wedding, and we were just sitting around, but everyone was about to go to sleep, and they were trying to pick a movie to turn on. I was like, let's just turn this on real quick. It's a fun movie to have on in the background. We can talk over it.
Yeah.
We shut our mouths and sat there for 2 hours and watched every minute of that movie.
Truman Show.
Truman Show.
So Truman Show's got some really interesting things going on, stories to tell. First of all, I saw Truman Show in theaters with my older brother in 1998. I was 10. He's 9 years older. He just shit-talked it the whole time after. My brother's like, he's just like loves to hate on movies.
He does. David loves to do that.
So I thought it wasn't as good as it was, because when you're 10 and your older brother does that, you think that he's right.
Like, oh, yeah, you're right.
Yeah. But years later when I watched it again, and I watched it a lot of times, I had it on a VHS, it turns out this movie is just great. It does a lot of things that are really interesting. 1998 was kind of right before the boom of reality television.
Mm-hmm.
So it's weird. At the time, it seemed like this very innovative idea. You remember EdTV?
Yeah.
Matthew McConaughey.
It was Harrelson, right?
Yeah, Woody Harrelson, Matthew McConaughey. Mm-hmm. Within like a year of this movie.
Yeah.
And it's kind of the same concept. It's the idea that if there's a camera and it's watching you in your life, are people entertained by it? Turns out it's totally they are, because that's what life in television is
now.
That's
all it is now.
The cast is great. Jim Carrey, it turns in, I think, he's not actually the best part of the movie. He's very Jim Carrey. He's good, but actors.
Yeah, it's interesting, because I think that's why Truman is so fun to watch.
Yeah.
Is because he's this weird guy.
Yeah.
Like, imagine if you got to watch Jim Carrey exist all the time at like a 6 instead of at a 10. You know what I mean? Because he has toned down every man a little more.
Yeah.
But the other performances by his wife and his best friend, but honestly, dude, I'm gonna do it again.
Ed Harris.
Yeah.
He got the Oscar nomination
as Kristoff. Like, at the end, it's touching.
The scene when he's in the boat and he's talking to him
He's trying to kill him and by the water and the ocean, all that. Yeah.
There's this movie. It's another one, guys, that if you've never watched it, you can't walk out of this movie and not just feel like you just love it. It's got So Noah Emmerich is his best friend. Mm-hmm. He's great. It's the best thing I've ever seen Noah Emmerich in.
Yeah.
He's great. He's actually really good in The Americans, the show.
I mean, he's a great actor, but his performance in this is perfect.
Laura Linney is great. She's his wife. Natasha McElhone from Ronin, we just did last week on the show. She's in it. She's got a small role. And then Ed Harris, who really does steal the show, I believe. In the 90s, he got a few Oscar nominations, and this was one of them, a supporting actor nomination for this. His role is that essentially Truman has been raised to live in this world that it's this small world that he thinks is this like little town, but actually everybody's an actor. It's a job for everybody, and he's the only one unaware of what's going on. Kristoff is the director. He's kind of like Truman's father.
Director. Yeah, he's like essentially, like you said, his father, because Truman was bought by a TV network.
Yeah.
And he's his dad, essentially.
So he's sort of the director that watches, and it's great, guys. The Truman Show. Steven, have you seen The Truman Show?
For sure.
Yeah.
Such a good movie.
One of my favorites growing up. Peter Weir is the director. He's an Australian director, and he's a bit old now. I don't think is he alive still? I'm not actually sure.
The painted wall scene at one of the end, near the end of the movie by the ocean is one of the most memorable scenes of cinematography I've ever seen.
When he runs into it.
Yeah.
You're just like, oh, whoa. My God.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's awesome.
Because they do such a good job of making that little world so big, but also so tiny. And you're like, how have you not left?
Peter Weir had this incredible career. Gallipoli is an early one that he directed. Has Mel Gibson, a really young Mel Gibson. He did Witness, is him.
He did
The Mosquito Coast, The Year of Living Dangerously. He ended up doing Fearless. He did Master and Commander. He's got like at least a couple other really famous ones. But Weir just had just this awesome career, and this is one of my favorites that he ever directed. So
I also think, because the other movie that we were going to do, guys, or at least that I nominated, had we not already done the other guys, was Stranger Than Fiction.
Yeah,
for me, and I don't know if you like it as much as I do, but there's something about when these guys that are so known for being these just infuriatingly talented comedic actors, when you make them do a drama and they're on their game. Jim Carrey in this. I don't think he's quite as good in The Majestic, but Jim Carrey in this.
Eternal Sunshine's the one.
Eternal Sunshine.
Yeah.
And then you talk about Will Ferrell in Stranger Than Fiction.
It's great,
is so good. I never saw the one where he played like the alcoholic.
Everything Must Go.
Yeah.
Really good.
He's really good in that,
He's solid. He's very solid.
So that's another thing, guys, is like you see someone that you've watched do one thing for their entire career, go watch them do this. They're excellent at it.
So we're going to move on to the final two, guys.
And these are huge.
Two of our favorite movies ever. These are both. So on this list here, both of these two movies are on my top 10 favorite movies of all time.
Yeah.
It's possible Jerry makes it, but I don't think. I think that these two 100% do.
They're definitely in my top 5, both of them.
I think Shawshank for me is like 3 or 4, which is our next movie.
Yeah, so Shawshank Redemption, man.
Yeah.
Do you remember what you felt like the very first time that you realized what happened? How he got away?
No. But I do remember coming around on this movie. So we're the same age, and talking about film in like the mid early 2000s, like in those years, this movie had only been around for less than a decade at that point. Mm-hmm. This movie came out in 1994. This, as an Oscar nominee for Best Picture, went up against both Pulp Fiction and Forrest Gump. Like, talk about a stacked five.
Crazy year.
This movie has, like, if you look on IMDb's top 100, I think this movie is, like, top three.
No,
or
it's
two.
Number one.
Oh, it is now?
Been number one forever.
Okay, I thought, yeah. Godfather was. So, that's probably what I was thinking of, is that Shawshank Redemption was that movie where, when I looked at that list, I was like, that's crazy. I feel like people don't talk about this movie like it's one of the three best movies ever made.
No. But anyone that's, I guess, maybe like 25 plus, if you say anything to him about Shawshank, everyone's like, it's this. There's not one person that doesn't like Shawshank.
But it's also referred to by snobs as maybe the most overrated movie of all time.
I just don't get that.
Neither do I. I'm just saying it's weird when a movie touches you so much, because there's no one that doesn't love this movie.
No.
I mean, at least the people that aren't
that
the snobs.
I know. Yeah.
This is like the most satisfying movie to watch ever made.
It is. I think that is the best way to put it. If we had to have a thesis sentence for Shawshank, it would be the most satisfying movie ever made.
I take all my bribes in pie boxes now.
Yeah, right?
It's simple. Like, I took a screenwriting class in high school, and our teacher used the format of this movie to explain to us, like, what good screenwriting is, basic storytelling, how to move a scene, stuff like that, act one, act two, act three, the importance of it. It's just fucking brilliant.
It's perfect.
Yeah, it's got incredible performances by Tim Robbins. The voiceover by Morgan Freeman, I would say, is the barometer for good voiceover in movies, period.
Yeah.
It's the most famous voiceover ever, I think.
I think you might be right. I think it is, and I also... His voiceover is better than his performance.
Yeah.
As the act. Like, I know that's like a weird thing to kind of separate, but it's not saying that there's anything wrong with Red. Red is fantastic.
Yeah.
But his voiceover and the way it carries the film and moves it, and the amount of heartbreaking scenes in it, and how much you hate the two bad guys.
Yeah.
You know how I feel about having a great villain.
Yeah, they're both great.
They're both excellent.
It's a little black and white sometimes when you watch it. I think as I've gotten older and I've watched it, they feel a little... kind of sort of almost cartoonish how evil they are.
Yeah, it's weird. It's odd how we've kind of evolved as a society into wanting to like our villains a little bit.
Yeah.
We kind of need that. I mean, I know we've always been that way.
Yeah.
But you don't get as many villains in great films
that
are this one-dimensional.
It's also funny because I remember a lot of the opinions that I would hear about this movie not being so good. It was like when I was in high school and I would talk to the guys at the video store. Mm-hmm. Looking back, they seemed like grown men, adults. Looking back, they're probably like 24. And they had, like, seen The Shawshank Redemption. They were just snobs. Like, the same way that people... Same way, that, like, there are beer snobs. And you're like, shut up. Like, it's just... It's good or it's bad. But you don't have to, like, smack talk the greatest because, like, everyone likes it.
Yeah.
It's like Shawshank just is what it is.
I mean, you and I know an extraordinary amount about craft beer.
Yeah.
But we still will never talk to someone like the way that those snobs do.
No,
same
never.
Way about movies.
Yeah, I think if you were going to pick out, like, the most memorable thing about this movie... I think it is Morgan Freeman's voiceover. Suds on the Roof is...
That's a great scene.
Is
the voiceover. And then I think, honestly, him crawling through the tunnel and then getting out into and falling into the water.
Yeah, that the sequence, the getaway is like pretty memorable as well.
I still cheered.
Yeah.
Like when I watched it like a month ago, I was like, oh,
yeah.
Yes, dude.
There's something to be said for movies that if they're on cable, you'll never turn them off.
Yep.
I don't know how many movies there are like that where if it comes on, you're hooked.
This movie's dangerous because it's so long.
Yeah.
Too, and it just hooks you immediately.
Yeah. So movie's great. The supporting cast is great. I mean, what more can you say about Shawshank Redemption? If you guys haven't seen Shawshank Redemption,
I just don't understand.
If for some reason you missed that movie. I would say that if we ever were to do it, that is the thing. This is the most satisfying movie ever made.
Out of every movie we've talked about on the list so far, that is the one that you need to see right now if you haven't seen it yet.
And moving on to
and
the last movie on our list.
The last film.
Maybe the most discussed movie between the two of us. While I think The Other Guys is the most quoted, I think we've talked about Boogie Nights more than any movie ever.
We talk about Boogie Nights like it's our Bible.
We talk about it on like a daily basis.
And I don't even know what we talk about anymore about it.
It's just every character is incredible.
I think if I had to make a thesis statement for this movie,
yeah,
every single person in it gives top three performances of their career.
Yeah.
And I think the only reason I say top three is just because of Philip Seymour Hoffman and William H. Macy.
Yeah, right. Can you... PSH, that's a hard one. Though, honestly, I think you're right. I think you could come up with five or six that you could probably make the argument for.
Yeah.
But I could pretty much... I could argue Scotty J hard.
Absolutely. Yeah. Thomas Jane as well. Like, he's never been that guy. I mean, Thomas Jane is a good actor.
Yeah.
Good actor.
Yeah, yeah.
He's not fantastic in my mind.
Yeah.
But I do love him. In this film, he is incredible.
Boogie Nights is Paul Thomas Anderson's second film. So he did a movie called Heart Eight, also titled Sydney, that was in the mid-90s, I think like 1994 maybe.
Didn't he write this movie between like 18 and 20-something?
Yeah, so there's a short that he made called The Dirk Diggler Story.
Yes.
And I think he made it in film school. If not film school, it was around those years. And he tried to get that movie made. He ended up making Heart Eight. That movie got kind of taken from him by the studio and edited in a way that he wasn't happy with. If you guys haven't seen Heart Eight, it's actually kind of a funny movie. It's
interesting.
Yeah, well, it's got Sam Jackson, John C. Reilly, mm-hmm. Gwyneth Paltrow, Philip Baker Hall, Philip Seymour Hoffman has a small role. It's got like a crazy stacked cast of 90s actors.
All of his movies have just, yeah.
And then this is his next movie. And it's funny because Magnolia and There Will Be Blood are both so good. But I would still say that Boogie Nights is his masterpiece. Even though There Will Be Blood is more like highly regarded as, mm-hmm. I think, like a famous, important movie.
Well, one thing that people complain a lot about Paul Thomas Anderson is that his stories don't really end. They don't make a lot of sense. They're definitely not linear, and it's hard to follow for a lot of people.
Yeah.
And Boogie Nights, of the films that are the most like that, is the most linear. It's the easiest to follow, whereas There Will Be Blood is just a classic. It's just like a classic drama.
Yeah.
You know, there's no weird different cut stories that all come together or anything. It's just one man's story.
Yep.
And his ability to direct an ensemble cast and shoot it, even to the scene, the first scene that Mark Wahlberg does when he goes on set for his very first time.
Yeah.
And Scotty J is walking with him, or not Scotty J, Philip C.
Yeah.
Scotty J is walking with him through the hall, like all awkwardly and like chewing on the pen. He's like, "You're really sexy."
I like your name a lot.
We're a fucking idiot. We're a fucking idiot. All right, so we're going to queue up this scene, and this is a little bit of a longer scene. So while this scene is playing, we're going to also talk about how we're going to narrow it down
to this, to the two. On this list here.
Yeah, so guys, this is the drug deal gone bad scene. I think this scene's probably shown in more film schools than I can even care to imagine.
Yeah.
The music is another character in it, and Alfred Molina is just, I don't think I've ever seen him do anything better, and he's an incredible actor.
Yeah, Molina's so good. It's the scene's just set up so well. The way everything about it.
The tension.
Now, there is, I never looked into it, but somebody I knew once told me that actually this scene is lifted, like frame for frame, from another movie.
Really?
Which wouldn't surprise me, considering like the guys like P.T. Anderson
and Tarantino,
they kind of do that.
Uh-huh.
Though it's not something I've heard a lot of times, so I'm not sure if it's actually the case.
So my friends in college tried to get me to watch this movie with them a lot.
Yeah.
I didn't see this movie until my junior year of college. His stares, man. That Mark Wahlberg, when he just kind of stares off in the movie, is just, that's honestly, I think, the best part of his performance is just his stares. It's so crazy. I don't even know why.
Yeah.
I'd seen this scene about 10 times before I'd watched the movie.
Oh, really?
Because my friend showed it to me once, and I just watched it over and over and over. Like, look at that, man.
Yeah, the glare is a little bad here. You can barely see it, but I've seen this movie enough times.
It's just gone. He's just,
yeah.
He's just like, what has my life become? What am I doing here?
Thomas Jane, John C. Reilly.
And seeing John C, the fact that he's so diverse.
Yeah.
And he's so good.
Oh, yeah.
All right, so a poll, you think?
Oh, how to do it. So what we're going to do with these eight films is we're going to bracket these guys. We're going to decide what we think are the best matchups between these eight movies. We will post the full four matchups to start.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to decide if we should do it in the course of a week or if we should do it over a couple weeks.
I think we should do it over the course of a couple weeks.
Yeah, so we'll probably do round one like this week. We'll maybe talk about it. I guess we'll introduce it on this episode. That's fine. Mm-hmm. We'll queue up the four matchups to start things off, and next week we'll post the next one. The following week we'll do the finals. And I don't know if we'll do both movies in the finals.
Yeah, it depends on which two they are. Because if it's something that just seems ridiculous, and as fans, you guys are just like, why am I watching a review on AMA about The Weatherman?
Yeah, it seems, but we'll see. If it wins, it wins.
If it wins, it wins. If it gets first place, then it wins.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Which I don't think will happen. No. I'm pretty much positive I know what's going to win. It's going to be one of the final two movies.
It's got to be.
Yeah, I would think. We should make sure that we put them in separate brackets.
Absolutely. And gosh, Sunshine, guys. Sunshine.
Yeah, Sunshine. These movies would all be so much fun to do on the show. Anyway, guys, that's I mean, there's so much more to say about Boogie Nights.
There's so much more to say about all these films, but I mean, we've already talked for an hour about them.
Yeah, I mean, Boogie Nights and Magnolia, which is, we didn't list it, but they're the movies that he made back to back, and they're very similar in the sense that they're these huge ensemble pieces, a lot of the same actors, both Los Angeles. In some ways, I love Magnolia more. I've seen both movies so many times that, like, I have my moments with both of them. Magnolia has maybe the best Cruise performance ever. Magnolia has John C. Reilly in an amazing performance. It has Philip Seymour Hoffman in an amazing performance.
Burt Reynolds got the Oscar nod for
Boogie Nights.
For Boogie Nights, and he was furious
yeah.
at the end of production, saying that this is bullshit, my character, this is horrible, I don't want to be a part of this film.
Yeah.
The whole time, he was a complete asshole.
Yep.
And thought it was just the worst thing ever.
Yep.
And then he gets his Oscar nod.
And Cruise got the Oscar nod for Magnolia.
Yeah.
So those are the big like sort of centerpiece and things
Cruise
that sold the movies.
Plays so opposite himself in that film.
It's weird. Yeah, it's one of the only times you get to see Cruise be a truly ugly character. Like a really ugly, not just physically, but like an awful guy.
Yeah.
Total piece of shit.
Like no redeeming qualities.
Yeah.
And even the scene at the end, I think the reason that it's so even remotely redeeming is just because of how excellent the performance is.
Yeah. Yeah, it's cool. It's a really good movie in Magnolia. But Boogie Nights is unbelievable. I mean, guys, if there's one of these movies you haven't seen, go watch them. The 8, again, in case you tuned in late or zoned out, are Sunshine, The Other Guys, The Lord of the Rings Trilogy, Jerry Maguire, The Weatherman, The Truman Show, The Shawshank Redemption, and Boogie Nights. With a honorable mention to Magnolia. And we're going to put up those 8 on a thing for you guys to vote on and see what happens. And thanks for tuning in, guys. I hope you enjoyed the show. Let us know if you like us to do kind of these like different style episodes sometimes that have a little bit more, diversity than just the single film in-depth analysis. You can find me if you want to tweet at me at Ben Bateman Media.
And you can find me at Andrew Guy. And like you said, this one was like a little more out there than probably the other ones we've discussed. Because we've discussed like top 10 headshots, top 10 revenge moments or revenge kills, or like you said, a heist episode.
Ranking the at this point 70 movies we've done on the show, like doing a full on breakdown consensus list of the best in order 70 on the show
that we'd have to agree on.
We'd have to agree on the list. So that's an idea. Maybe we'll wait till we get to 100 for that or something.
Yeah, that'd be sweet.
That's what we are doing, guys. So that wraps it up. If you want to find the podcast itself, find us at Twitter at AMA Podcast and let us know your thoughts. Follow along and obviously vote on the poll. So thanks, Stephen Lemieux, for engineering the episode. We'll see you guys soon.
See you next week.
Producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire Popcorn Talk Network. We would like to thank you for tuning in. For questions or comments, be sure to visit popcorntalk.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of the Popcorn Talk Network.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Popcorn Talk Network or its owners or principals.